Let's go ahead and begin this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I'd like to welcome you all to the Belch Room here in the State Capitol. Today, for the record, is Tuesday, May 1st, 2007. Or Thursday, May 1st.
Third.
May 3rd. Oh, this is all messed up, isn't it?
It's the 16th and we'll all go home.
It's that time of the session. Thursday, May 3rd, 2007. We are in the twilight zone here at the rush to adjournment. For the record, members present are Senators Bundy, Ellis, and Stevens. We have a number of items before us today, so we're going to try and get through this as best we can. And the game plan is to begin first with House Bill 136, Dental Hygienists. I should announce, though, before that last night we held our second stakeholders meeting on unemployment insurance. It was a great meeting, a lot of good conversation and exchange of information. Those meetings will continue on the unemployment insurance bill, and anyone interested in participating, please contact our committee staff and we'll make sure you're kept apprised of the work of the committee on unemployment insurance. But things are going well in that subcommittee so far. Okay, after House Bill 136, Dental Hygienist by Representative Stoltz, we'll move to House Bill 170, the insurance bill. And then we also have before us today Senate Bill 94. That's for that bill will be held over, but today we will have the initial public hearing. That's services for the blind. And then we may also have time to consider Senate Bill 117, Workers' Comp Disease Presumption, and Senate Bill 99, Police Standards Council Membership. We'll try and get through as much of this as possible, and the ones we don't complete will be held over for further consideration. So with that, if Representative Stoltz or Mr. Mulligan, good afternoon.
Thank you, sir.
If you could state your full name and affiliation for the record, and please go ahead. Just remind us of the bill before us.
No problem, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ben Mulligan, staff to Representative Bill Stoltz. House Bill 136 is just meant to expand some of the duties of dental hygienists in the state. We're talking being able to work with a little more with fillings, local anesthesia under general supervision, and to enter into collaborative agreements with dentists in order to go out under the direction of dentists to go out and do some work that they normally can't do now.
Okay. Are there questions or comments for the presenter? If not, Mr. Mulligan, thank you for being with us. Are there folks here in Juneau who would like to testify on House Bill 136? Seeing none here, are there any folks online, teleconference or off-net, on House Bill 136? Okay, and Mr. Mulligan, remind me where the bill goes following action here in this committee.
Mr. Chairman, it goes to the Senate Finance Committee.
Right, that's what I thought. Okay, this is the point of time for, we've had this bill before us previously and took testimony. No one else to testify today. Is there any discussion in the committee, or what is the will of the committee with this bill? Senator Bundy?
I would move that this bill move forward with individual recommendations, attach fiscal note to the black hole.
Okay.
Or to Senate Finance, whichever it may be.
Do you mean that in a pejorative sense, or just a statement of facts? Whichever it is, I appreciate the motion. Is there any discussion of the motion to move the bill? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill moves on to the next committee of referral.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mulligan. Please say hello to our good friend, Representative Stoltz.
I will do, Mr. Chair, and if there's cookies, I'll bring you down some.
Okay, thank you very much. The Stoltz cookies are famous. Okay, the next item is House Bill 170, insurance bill. Ms. Hall, if you could join us, please. This is the initial presentation of this legislation. I think given the late hour of the session, I would consider moving the bill if the committee is comfortable with the subject matter today, or we can hold it over and move it expeditiously at the next opportunity. So, Ms. Hall, if you could please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Linda Hall, Director of the Division of Insurance. House Bill 170 was done by request. That request was mine. It has two purposes. The basic one is financial regulation, enactment of measures that we need to maintain our NAIC accreditation. Alaska, as all states, are accredited by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners as part of our solvency oversight. States rely on the quality of other states' financial review and oversight And the accreditation process is to ensure that our financial regulation meets certain standards. Alaska has been accredited for several years. We are up for reaccreditation this year, and we'll have an accreditation review in August. The basic model regulations here are actually, today, many of them are part of the financial statement, and they're referenced in statute in 2109-200. Those statement instructions are going away, and we're seeking to have them put into statute so that we still have the basis to enforce those. We also have some abilities that allow the director to require a report describing internal controls, to have reports of misstatement of financial conditions from a CPA. Basically, we're looking to make sure that we are doing appropriate financial oversight. Section 3 of the bill deals with custodial agreements, who can have the assets of the insurer, and we require that the custodial agreement be in writing. We want to make sure that the risk of insurers becoming insolvent because of dishonest or unqualified custodians does not exist. Those are the major financial pieces. There are some other clarifications. I hesitate to use the term retaliatory tax, but I will. It's a tax equalization. If other states charge our domestic insurers their higher rate of premium tax, we will charge in return their companies the higher rate of tax. So it's kind of an equalization. It's not meant to really be punitive. Sections 9, 12, and 13 are to clarify that retaliatory fees are not to negate various premium tax credits that have been enacted by this body in prior pieces of legislation. Last year, we passed a bill that gave premium tax credits for contributions to the high-risk health insurance pool. We want to make sure that we don't penalize insurers who are paying those assessments. The same thing is true of charitable contributions to colleges or the Alaska Fire Standards Council. So we're just trying to clarify that retaliation doesn't apply to those things. The balance of the bill deals with changing words such as directive to order, which is actually what we do. We issue orders, not directives. We have made a couple changes in high deductible health insurance plans so that they actually qualify and meet IRS standards. We have changed the guarantee association references so that an insurance company who is authorized to write health insurance in our state can be assessed for administrative charges. Unless they actually write policies, they would not pay insolvency assessments. And the balance of the bill gives us authority to adopt regulations, and it does have some, I would categorize, unusual effective dates. There are pieces of this bill that we have asked not be effective until 2010. They do impact industry. We have had discussion with industry, and we want to make sure there's time for them to prepare for any changes that may be required as a result of the bill. I will say that to date I've not had any negative testimony about the bill. I've tried to work with the groups that had some concerns. And with that, I would entertain questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hall. We appreciate you being here and your professional work on this subject matter. Are there questions or comments for Ms. Hall? Senator Mundy.
Oh, just to you, Mr. Chairman, I agree at the late date of the session that I'd be comfortable if it's your wish to move the bill today.
Okay. I don't believe there's anyone signed up to testify. I know Gloria Glover from the division is available online to answer questions if necessary. And I would just ask, is there anyone online or off-net who would like to testify on the bill, on House Bill 170? Is there anyone here in the belt room who would like to testify? Seeing none, it's just whether there's a – I'm flexible. It's just whether there's a willingness of the committee to act at this time, or if folks need a little more time to think about it and act at the next meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I'm perfectly willing to move it out. I think it's an issue that needs to get moving at the end of the session here.
Okay.
And perfectly.
We are the only committee of referral, so we need to make sure we've gone through it. And Ms. Hall, you're giving us your professional assurance that there are no landmines or time bombs in this legislation. And
Mr. Chairman, I really hesitate to make that kind of statement.
Well.
But as I said, I have not had any opposition. There's been one a very short piece of testimony from someone who had a concern. We addressed the concern. So I think having been well acquainted with landmines in some prior things I've been involved in, I really don't think there are any, but I never would, you know, assure you of that.
Okay. Okay, and I guess if we discover any between now and the Rules Committee or the floor action, we could always consider it at that time.
Mr. Chairman,
if there's nothing further?
Do we need to adopt the CS first?
No, there is no proposed Labor and Commerce Committee substitute.
Okay.
So that is the bill before us already from the last body. So,
okay, Mr. Chairman, I move that we move out House Bill number 170, sister House Bill number 170, Finance, with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there discussion of the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you, Ms. Hall, very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm just looking at our workload here. We have the Senate Bill 94, Services for the Blind. There are a number of folks who would like to testify on that piece of legislation today. We also have Senate Bill 117. Senator French's staff here, yes, they are. That's the workers' comp disease presumption. There is a committee substitute. I'm thinking that could be a very brief thing. Mr. Motoro, why don't you join us at the table? Let's slip Senate Bill 117 in here for some consideration. You need.
Senator is coming down.
Okay, but you need to put the phone down. We're ready to go. Good afternoon, Mr. Motoro.
Good afternoon.
If you could just very, very briefly remind us of the subject matter before us, and then take us through the proposed committee substitute.
Okay, so you summary of the bill, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a reminder of the subject matter.
Subject matter here is presumptive disability for certain classes of first responders. And this bill would put a presumption that certain diseases, whether they be cancers or diseases that arise, that have been found to be, that are found to be more often found with firefighters, be presumed to be work-related. Excuse me, I wasn't planning on doing this.
Okay.
The proposed CS in front of you today would make it very clear that there would be no obligation on behalf of the municipality or of another employer to cover the cost of a qualifying medical exam. This is something brought up in other testimony and questions last time the bill was before the committee. And if for instance, the committee, however, it does provide an option for an individual who is not provided with a medical exam. This is for the baseline medical exam that would be needed before the presumption could apply. If the individual would like to have the presumption, they would then have the option of getting it on their own. And unless somebody gets that qualifying exam, the presumption would not apply. So that's a summary of the CS.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. Are there questions or comments for Mr. Motoro? If not, Senator French, thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. There are two folks signed up to testify on the bill. Nope. Okay, there are several other folks. So I'd ask people to keep their comments as brief as possible and to address the proposed committee substitute. And the first will be Mr. Rod Harris.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
We can. Please give your full name and affiliation for the record and go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Rod Harris. I'm speaking on behalf of the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association today, and I'm calling from Eagle River, Alaska. Just real quick, I'm calling in support of the bill, and I just wanted to point out that with the committee substitute, I think something else that needs to be addressed there is that firefighters across the state, across the nation as a whole, are using every engineering device out there that's been implemented, air packs, turnouts, improvements in turnouts over the years. I just want to urge that the committee understand that there are everything that's been proposed and brought forward for firefighters to improve our health, improve our job, and make it safer has been implemented. There hasn't been, you know, one thing out there that has been brought forward and we just don't use it. So that's something that's really important to consider, because we know that there's a lot of carcinogens in smoke, and until they develop something that can completely encapsulate a firefighter and protect them from those, we're going to constantly be exposed to those through our turnouts and stuff like that until those further improvements are made. The committee substitute, you know, takes care of the cost concern there, I guess, with the physical, but just so that people understand, we're hiring healthy people, whether that committee substitute's there or not. We're still going to hire those healthy people. They go through the physical process. We're talking about people that are 10 years into their career developing things that, you know, they wouldn't normally be exposed to in an uncontrolled environment. So just would urge the will of the committee to move the bill to the next committee today in support of this committee substitute. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Harris. Next will be Mike Davidson, followed by Jeff Briggs. I'd also note that Mr. Paul Lasanke is with us to answer questions from Division of Workers' Comp, Department of Labor. Mr. Davidson, please go ahead.
Yeah, for the chair and members of the committee, can you hear me?
We can, loud and clear. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Mike Davidson calling today from Gerber, Alaska. I'm with the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. I apologize that I can't be with you in person today. I'm calling to testify in favor of Senate Bill 117. Senate Bill 117 is critical for Alaska's firefighters and first responders. It provides a safety net of protections that currently doesn't exist. We continuously at our job have the potential to be exposed to hazardous substances, known carcinogens, and diseases. The very nature of our job is very unpredictable. We don't have the ability in say, that others would say have in a facility or something like that to have some pre-knowledge about the things we may be exposed to or the diseases that are that a patient we may be taking care of have. And because of that unpredictable nature, we offer a place in situations where the very nature of our job is to respond, but it's doing so in this unpredictable environment where we may be exposed to things that we don't even become aware of until long after the fact. That lack of knowledge at the time makes it very difficult for us to track these exposures, even though we know they occur. As Mr. Harris pointed out in his testimony, we take every engineering practice possible to try and avoid these things. There certainly is the potential for this legislation to pass to have some fiscal impact to employers. But what I would put forth to the committee is currently there would be the same fiscal impact. In other words, our goal is to have, if anything, less people get sick to the point where we have no people get sick. So if we accept that we currently know people acquire these illnesses, whether they be bloodborne pathogens, cancers acquired through exposure to known carcinogens, when these things occur currently, there's the same fiscal impact there would be if this legislation rose. But currently, that fiscal impact is often borne by the very person who's in the worst position to deal with it, which is the sick person. Most of these diseases are terminal events. When people acquire these, they likely won't survive this event. It may not be in the immediate, 24 to 48 hours after a diagnosis, but as you can imagine, the diseases named in this bill are very, very serious, and for the most part, unfortunately, for myself and the members I represent, they're often terminal. I would argue that these people have put their lives on the line, have put their families at risk and themselves at risk to protect the citizens of Alaska, and we owe it to them to provide them these important protections in their time of greatest need. Unfortunately, these things aren't as simple as, on Tuesday you were exposed and on Wednesday you acquired the disease. So it's very difficult for us to file into the current workers' compensation system because it's difficult to draw the direct link to the exact day that the exposure occurred. On the other hand, the medical evidence demonstrates that the very limited scope of diseases we've named are very, very likely to be associated with our occupation when they're acquired. They're acquired in rates in our occupations hundreds of times greater than the average populace in the case of cancers. And in the case of the contagious diseases, frequently we can draw no other link within our immediate family to a source for the disease other than our occupation. Again, I don't want to minimize the possibility of fiscal impacts. There certainly is a possibility for some. Many of the large employers in the state itself, in the case of state troopers, or the municipality of Anchorage, in the case of the Anchorage Fire Department, already conduct physicals that, in my opinion, would meet the requirements to establish a baseline for these employees. The requirement for physicals was placed in the legislation for the employers, for their protection. It was to protect the employers from frivolous claims or claims that weren't justified for diseases that had been acquired prior to coming to that employer as an employee. So the physical requirement is not there as a financial burden for employers. It's there as protection for employers. And I would argue that employers that aren't providing these physicals for these employees are being irresponsible to the constituents they represent, because they have no baseline, if later on these employees do become sick, to track whether that was something that occurred as a result of their employment or perhaps was a pre-existing condition prior to their employment. In any case, I'd like to stress, if there are fiscal impacts, those same current fiscal impacts exist, and what we must know is that currently those fiscal impacts are frequently being borne by the employee. Otherwise, there would be no cause to be concerned about increased fiscal impacts to the employer. And I would argue that it's irresponsible for employers to be burdening these employees that have placed themselves in this great position of peril and now may be fighting for their very life to also shoulder the fiscal impacts of these horrible illnesses. With that said, I certainly think it's an important piece of legislation. It's protection that we direly need here in the state of Alaska, and I'd stand for any questions from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Davidson. Are there questions or comments? If not, thank you very much. Let's go on quickly to Jeff Briggs. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Jeff Briggs. I'm representing the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. I'm down here from Anchorage. According to the Alaska Department of Public Safety, there are approximately 1,000 full-time paid firefighters in the state of Alaska. The opponents of Senate Bill 117 estimate the number of firefighters who would be affected by this bill to be in the neighborhood of about 9,250. Just yesterday, I received an email from the state fire marshal's office, and there's 4,600 structural firefighters registered in the state of Alaska. The opponents also are saying that there's going to be up to $12 million worth of physicals for this bill, which is not the case because no physicals are mandatory for this bill. In Anchorage, we pay between $450 and $500 a person for our pre-qualifying hiring exam. I'm sure it'd be a little higher in other areas because we have a larger populace. But firefighters don't have the luxury of knowing what exactly we'll encounter. I can't tell you how scary it is to be crawling around in a structure fire and afterwards you realize that it was a meth lab. Some of the worst chemicals around are in meth lab fires. All structure fires have tens of thousands of chemicals, and there's no telling what they do when they mix together. In 2002, the Alaska Supreme Court decision Moody versus Delta Western, Justice Matthews stated that due to what is known as the fireman's rule, both firefighters and police officers are paid to confront crisis and allied dangers in by uncircumspect citizenry, a circumstance that serves to distinguish firefighters and police from most other public employees. Citizens summon police and firefighters to confront danger. Government entities maintain police and fire departments in anticipation of those inevitable physical perils that burden the human condition, whereas most public employment posts are created not to confront dangers that will arise, but to perform some other public function that may incidentally involve risk. The public pays for emergency responses of public safety officials in the form of salaries and enhanced benefits, which this is would fall underneath an enhanced benefit. According to the American cancer statistics, about half the men in this room will be diagnosed with some sort of cancer in their lifetime. They live to be about 90 years old. Terrible and true, but how many of these men will contract the kind of cancers listed in Senate Bill 117? Approximately 3 in 10. This figure is given to us, but how many of those 3 contracted these cancers while carrying out the course of their occupation? How many of those contracted this cancer before the 55th birthday? Very few. Like the majority of firefighters who would be covered by this bill. In closing, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to schedule this bill to be heard again. It's important to the Alaska's public safety community, and I urge you to pass this out of committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Briggs. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Senator Bundy?
Yeah, question. As a public employee, you're covered with health insurance, are you not?
Yes, sir, through the chair.
And this would just if this were, bill were passed, you, to get workers' comp, then you get an unrebuttable coverage. In other words, with health insurance, there may be some limitations. Worker comp would not provide those or require those limitations.
Through the chair, I believe that this is not, it's not unrebuttable. There's nothing that guarantees this coverage. If the employer or the workers' comp board feels that there is evidence to disprove the claim, then they have all the power in the world to go ahead and do so. And in filing through a person's personal health insurance for something that was caused on the job, I think there's probably an issue in that.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Briggs.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Senator French, do you want to join us at the table? Do you have any comments on the proposed committee substitute? Your staffer, before you got here, went through it. Any other comments before we consider adopting the CS?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Hollis French. No, I think the main concern in prior hearings was the cost of implementing the idea, and the CS addresses that by making the medical examination cost be borne by the firefighter, him or herself. So thank you.
Okay. Okay. Is there discussion of the committee substitute where it's version E that is before us for consideration? Any discussion? I'll entertain a motion to adopt the committee substitute. Senator Stevens?
I'm just trying to go through my notes here. Can you explain, Senator French, in the CSE is on page 3E, is that new? Am I reading that right?
The only, through the chair, Senator Stevens, the only change in the bill is on page 3. Yes, subsection E, that's exactly right.
Could you explain then what that really means?
It essentially, it just says that the provisions of the bill that call for a medical examination don't require a municipality or other employer of firefighters to actually have to provide that qualifying medical examination. That's on line 27. So it imposes absolutely no burden whatsoever upon an employer or a municipality to pay for the medical examination, which is a precondition to getting the presumption. So the cost will be borne, if at all, by the individual firefighter, or should the municipality choose to do so, it can decide to do so on its own initiative. But there's nothing in this state law that mandates the payment of the cost of the examination.
Thank you, and through the chair. So this clearly is an opt-out issue that for the communities, municipalities, should they choose.
Exactly. If Anchorage decides, if the municipality looks at this bill and says, you know what, you know, we think it's a good idea, but we can't pay for it, then the individual firefighters are left having to foot the bill themselves with no mandate from the state, no unfunded mandate, if you will, from the state to provide the exam.
Yeah. That was a big bone of contention with the original bill, and I appreciate you going off and working out an accommodation. Senator Bundy?
As I understand, there wouldn't be any cost to the municipality for the physical. Now, whether the workers' comp rates went up and their increased cost to the municipality is another question.
Senator French?
And that's a fair question. If I can respond, you should have just received an updated Ledge research report that we received today, dated May 3rd, 2007, that shows and there's a chart there of the workers' comp rates in California. The California, as you may remember, adopted the presumption in 1999. They had been seeing a rise in workers' comp rates beginning before 1999, and since then they've returned down to about what are the historical norms there. So I think the evidence is at least balanced, if you will, that the presumption doesn't create a large rise in workers' comp premiums.
Okay. Senator Bundy, on that point?
I don't think this indicates that adopting that reduces workers' comp premium, though, does it?
And I don't think we ever made that assertion, but thank you, Senator Bundy, for clearing up the record.
Okay. Further discussion of the committee's proposed committee substitute. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We just received a letter on our desk up here dated May 3rd from Millie Martin, who's a member of the Kenai Borough Assembly. And do you have a copy of that, Senator?
I'm not
French?
Certain that I do, Senator.
We'll get you a copy. Would you mind summarizing the contents?
She's taking a strong position in opposition to this bill, and one of the things she says directly is a quotation. My concern is that all of these diseases are chronic, that often have genetic and our lifestyle choices as their cause. So she's saying genetic or lifestyle choices. So I would guess like something like maybe a chronic smoker it's a lifestyle choice, but would be covered under workers' comp if we pass this. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I think the short answer is probably not. If the fact of a person smoking is well known in the community, established through sales, personal observations, or whatever, they're not going to be able to win a claim for lung cancer workers' comp claim. The adjuster is going to come in and say, no, this guy smokes. And that's clearly more serious a cause than occasional fire or smoke inhalation.
Well, thank you. And Mr. Chairman, then would you comment directly on, again, my concern is that all of these diseases are chronic, that often they have genetic and our lifestyle choices as their cause. And would you say that that is not a correct statement then?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I'd be a little reluctant to adopt or reject that statement outright. I'm not a doctor. Whether non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is chronic, genetic, or a lifestyle choice, I don't know. I don't want to go out on a limb and testify to something I can't swear to.
Thank you,
Senator French. If you could just stay there, I believe a Mr. Wally Baird has signed up to testify on this bill. Mr. Baird, are you there?
I am here.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record and go ahead quickly, please.
My name is Wally Baird. I'm the city manager in Bethel. And I am representing the city of Bethel. I have concerns with this particular bill as it relates to the impact that it will have on a community such as ours here, where we're extremely tight in our budget as it is. We are also self-insured in our health and wellness insurance. Many of these provisions, particularly an inclusion in this bill for prostate cancer, which is something that the average male is going to get in one out of three cases. That's a little bit more than what was mentioned as far as the incidences in others. This is something that I think can be linked to genetics, not necessarily lifestyle, but to include something like this in a bill that is supposed to be covering workplace hazards, I think is really stretching the limit there. There are a lot of people with whom I am familiar who have contracted prostate cancer who have never worked in a situation where the working environment would be conducive to any type of cancer. I also feel that there are many other points that would really make a bill such as this unnecessary, considering the types of policies that our police department or our fire department has for entering buildings, for entering any kind of a situation, which even has the potential of being hazardous, and the real impact on workers' compensation that something like this would have, as well as the impact on insurance rates. It was mentioned that the bill does not require a city to pay for the baseline examination by a physician. However, if the city is providing insurance and the insurance will be used for that examination, it does have an impact on the city. And in Bethel in particular, we're self-funded. And we pay for that, whether the city pays for it outright or whether the individual has that examination, that physical examination, and insurance pays for it, we're still paying for it. And it's spread across the same population. So I think there are some things in this bill, as I understand it, that would be either more appropriately left out or addressed in some way that, in fact, it doesn't become a burden on the community, the taxpayers in the community, or the city itself. Also, I think as I read through this that it appears that the assumption is that our workers' compensation system is not adequate to cover these instances, that it's somehow broken. And I don't know that that's actually the case. It appears to me that the workers' compensation does a very good job in covering legitimate injuries or diseases that are contracted in the course and scope of the job. I don't know that this is something that is so important that it should impact the entire population of a community that provides full-time fire services for the benefit of so very few when there are already are options to cover that. I think those are the things that I would add to my comments to this particular bill. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome, Mr. Baird. Thank you for being with us. Senator Bundy?
Thank you. Mr. Baird, do you provide health insurance benefits to your firefighters?
Yes, we do.
And would those benefits cover the illnesses that are addressed in this bill?
For the most part, and I didn't find any that would not be covered in there.
And are you having problems recruiting firefighters?
We are.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Senator French, did you have any comments at this stage?
Just on the subject of health insurance, of course, that covers your medical costs and your out-of-pocket medical costs after you've met your deductible. What it does not cover are your lost wages and the money you lose in not being able to go to work.
So back to the committee substitute. I'm hoping to get that adopted because I think it makes an important improvement or accommodation in the bill. Is there any further discussion by the committee of the proposed committee substitute version E? I'll entertain a motion to adopt that as the item before us.
I move CS for Senate Bill number 117, version E.
Okay. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, that is adopted as the version of the bill before us. Is there anyone else here in the Belcher Room or online who would like to testify on the bill? Okay, sure. And I would note that the bill may eventually go on to the HES Committee and the Senate Finance Committee. So there are two other committees of referral. Mr. Sear, please go ahead.
For the record, my name is John Sear. I'm the Executive Director of the Public Safety Employees Association. And we would wholeheartedly hope that this committee would pass this bill out and that it would become law. I mean, I think it is only too clear. If you look at what happens with firefighters and police officers and the rising number of meth labs and the different chemicals and the things that are out there that critically affect long-term health, that a bill like this is absolutely essential. I won't take the committee's time only to say that we do support this and we do thank Senator French and the committee for this bill. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anyone further on the bill today? Yes, sir. Come forward.
Thank you. My name is John Grummet. I'm president-elect of the Alaska Independent Agents and Insurance Brokers. And in consideration of the bill, we just want you to keep in mind that it would make it incredibly difficult for employers to controvert claims. And that the language in there right now we feel is very broad and you know, why wouldn't it include nurses, doctors, anybody else for that matter? And that we feel that, you know, it might not be popular, but that this is something at this time, unless the language changes, to be included in the health care.
Do you have any specific suggestions?
Not at this time. And that's all I had.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions or comments? If not, thank you very much. Anyone else to testify on this bill? Please come forward.
Dominic Lozano, Fairbanks Fire Department, President of the Fairbanks Firefighters Association. And just to kind of wrap this up and be really quick, you know, it was addressed several times about our personal health insurance and how we're covered there. And as Senator French mentioned, you know, the lost wages, the lost time off work, you know, but also when filing a workman's comp claim, you know, that option's always there today. It's there, you know, but it's always asked is what incident did you occur, you know, this exposure occur at? And that's an unknown. And that's where the firefighting, that's the reason behind the bill is that date's not there. You know, there's a firefighter in Fairbanks currently who has lung cancer. He's in his early 50s, been a firefighter for 30 plus years, and, you know, never a smoker, healthy individual, and he's contracted lung cancer, and he's going through his chemo and radiation treatment currently today. And, you know, when the idea of a workman's comp claim was brought up, he was asked, give us the date of when this exposure occurred, and have your doctor back that testimony up and say that absolutely your lung cancer is from this job. And, you know, when you're fighting for, you know, one, going through the chemo and fighting for that part, you know, it's very difficult to have to then worry about going through the hearings of workman's comp hearings and that process. He elected to go through his own health insurance, and they've come through as much as they can, but there's large, considerable out-of-pocket costs associated with that. And, you know, the drain on him personally has gone to the point where now he's, you know, he's considering, well, what do I do now? You know, he's, like I said, 30 plus years in the fire service. You know, he's almost out of sick leave. You know, 20 years accumulation of sick leave, it's almost gone. And I think it's very important that the reasoning behind this bill is to protect individuals like this. And, you know, I know there's concerns from these other, you know, smaller municipalities, places around the state, that there's going to be an exorbitant cost. And I think if you look at the criteria of the bill, you know, it was addressed, Senator Stevens, you addressed smoking. Well, you know, smoking specifically pointed out in the bill, if you're a smoker, then you're not under this presumption that you'd have to go through the workman's comp claim just like anyone else would have to go through. And I think the evidence would point to, well, you're a two-pack-a-day smoker, then, you know, and you contracted lung cancer. Well, no, you're not going to get the workman's comp coverage. But, you know, so I think the bill was written with the employer's safety in mind, knowing that, you know, there's some cost going to be accrued to this, but we try to limit it as much as possible, and I think that this bill would be very beneficial to move out of committee today. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lozano. Any comments or questions? If not, thanks for being with us. We have made progress on this legislation with the committee substitute, in my opinion. We've continued the public testimony. We're not going to drive this to a decision point today. I know that may be a disappointment to the supporters of the bill. We're missing a couple of committee members. It's an important piece of legislation that probably deserves the attention of the entire committee. So we will try and bring things to a decision point when all of us are here and able to make a decision. So thank you all for being with us on the bill. We need to hold that over. We'll let you know when it will come back before us, because I personally would like to move the bill on to the HES committee this session so they can work on it in that committee as well. So we'll keep you posted when the next opportunity will be. Thank you, Senator French, for being here. I'm going to slip back to the original schedule of Senate Bill 94, Services for the Blind, a bill I introduced by request, Senate Bill 94. For the folks waiting for the other bill, Senate Bill 99, Police Standards Council Membership, we would hope to continue the public testimony on that bill today, but we'll see how we do with our time. So let's give folks a minute here to reposition. And welcome to my staffer, Ms. Kate Herring. Thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kate Herring, staff to Senator Ellis. Senate Bill 94 was introduced at the request of several constituents who feel that the blind community in Alaska would be better served by an office specifically addressing the blind community rather than the existing vocational rehabilitation program. The existing division covers Alaskans with a variety of different disabilities, and this group of constituents feel that sometimes the blind community can get lost in this kind of large umbrella of the program. So in that vein, Senate Bill 94 would establish a division of blind services in the Department of Health and Social Services and makes related changes to the administration of the vocational rehabilitation program. You may notice a new sponsor statement. We had discussed perhaps putting the Division of Blind Services into labor. We had gone back and forth, but it is still in the bill as Department of Health and Social Services. So that is the change in the sponsor statement. Mm-hmm. And actually, at this time, I'd like to call on Mr. Sandy Sanderson, who's from the Alaska Independent Blind, to go over the bill in a little bit more depth. So, Mr. Sanderson.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Herring. Mr. Sanderson, welcome. And I know after your testimony, there are other folks who would like to share their views as well. Mr. Sanderson, welcome to Juneau. Thank you for being with us. If you could just state your name and affiliation again for the record, and then go ahead.
My name is Sandy Sanderson, and I'm the president of the Alaska Independent Blind, an organization of some 450 blind members. And I want to thank Chair of this committee and fellow senators that you have here for holding this hearing. I have two reasons why we need this. Nationwide, the underemployment and unemployment of the blind, it's a rough figure, 80.4%. That in itself is a horrible, horrible figure. But in Alaska, we can be proud of ourselves. It's 93% here. And I don't think that says much for those that are supposed to be working with and for the blind. Now, another strong factor in this, I believe, is, and it's been proven over the years, 30 years ago, a lady and myself started a Center for the Blind. And to this day, the program is not properly funded. Why can I say that? I can say that because it takes some professionals that know how to train and worked with blind people to get them employment, etc. Well, the problem is that's not happening because this center is paid on fee for services, which means when somebody comes to the center, then the center will get paid. If nobody shows, they get no pay. Now, you can't hold professional people that have degrees, university degrees and so forth, on nickels and dimes. It doesn't work. It does not work. And I've seen over the years where people have been brought in off the streets to train blind people in various things, not knowing the first thing about it to start with. That's what we've been up against, and that should not be the situation. Now, another one, which I think is shows where we sit and where the blind sit and where the rest of the disabled sit, is this. Not my figures, not the figures of the Alaska Independent Blind, but the figures of DVR. 29,000 disabled people in the state of Alaska. Of those 29,000, by DVR's figures, 10 to 12,000 of them are visually impaired. I hope you can do the math on that, and it's about 40%. 40%. So I think, thus being 40% of the disabled community, I think that leads us into our own little area, and an area that needs expert and professional help and guidance. So I want to thank you for having this hearing once again.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Mr. Sanderson. Thank you for making the effort to get to Juneau.
Well, you bet.
We appreciate the effort. And I need to announce for the folks that were interested in Senate Bill 99, the Police Standards Council membership by Senator French, we will not get to that bill today. I apologize. We have about 20 or so people signed up for the Blind Services Bill. We're going to try and ask everyone to keep their remarks brief. We'll try and accommodate as many as we can. This bill, if I didn't say so before, will be held over. It will not pass out today. It will be held over for further consideration. But out of respect for the folks who've shown up, we'll try and get through as many as possible. Lynn Corral is coming forward here in Juneau. While she's getting into position, let's go to Carla Jutzi in Anchorage. Carla, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead, give your name and affiliation for the record, and then you'll be followed by Lynn Corral here in Juneau. Carla, go ahead. Carla, you need to get closer to the microphone.
This is Carla Jutzi. I'm the director at the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and we're the agency that Sandy Sanderson helped found 30 years ago. And the center does not have an official position on this legislation, but I wanted to bring to the committee's attention several aspects of the legislation that we hope you will look at closely. One of them is that the definition of blind person, blind persons, those would be who would be served by this agency, is fairly narrow. The definition is limited to those who are legally blind. And in fact, currently with vocational rehab services as well as our older clients, we serve quite a few people who are not yet legally blind but who have a visual disability that does in fact interfere with their ability to work or to live independently. And we wouldn't want this legislation or a change like this to reduce the number of people being served. So that's one issue we wanted to bring to your attention. Secondly, on page 7, line 15, the legislation would establish and maintain an orientation and adjustment center with qualified instruction for training for eligible blind persons. And that appears to set up a state-run and operated agency for training. Currently, as Sandy explained, the Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired is the agency that provides this adaptive skill training in Alaska. And we were organized 30 years ago by our founders as a nonprofit. We assume that it's not the intent of the legislation to put an effective organization out of business. So it would be, as the legislation is considered further, it would be important. One important discussion would be the intent of the legislation. Is it intended that the state would somehow take over our nonprofit agency? What is the intention and the implementation of that?
Ms. Jutzi, thank you very much.
The state certainly cannot support two training centers for the blind. And the last thing I would ask the committee to consider is that implementation of this legislation not adversely affect the funding of direct services for Alaskans who are visually disabled. Maximizing the amount of money that goes into direct services and resources is certainly important to the people we serve, and I suspect that the supporters of this legislation would agree with that. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Jitsi. I'd like to announce at this time that Senate Bill 99, the Police Standards Council, we will not be able to get to that today. I apologize for the folks online and anyone here in Juneau. We will let you know if and when that bill comes back before us. We're going to try and get through as much of this public testimony. Again, the bill's not moving. We're in the thinking stages. We're accommodating this public testimony and need to ask people to be as brief as they possibly can at this first hearing on the bill. Lynn Correll, followed by Janice Weiss. Ms. Correll, please go ahead.
Thank you, Senators, and our friends in the Senate on this committee, too. And thank you, Senator Ellis, for sponsoring the bill. I'm sorry I'm too close to the mic. I think that one of the things that we have noticed is because we have a general agency, and there are 24 states in the United States that have a separate agency, and as the political winds have come and gone, there are more or less of these separate agencies, but certainly the original legislation in the 30s that actually established separate service divisions and departments and state plans came up through the Barton La Follette Act, happened because people realized that there were different professional ways to train blind people instead of people who are not blind, and that we needed specialized training. And this has been, and certainly this is why we need the Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired, why we need good training, as Mr. Sanderson already stated. And as it has become and as it is today, we know of decisions that are made when rehabilitation is supposed to ensure consumer choice. That doesn't happen a great deal of the time. Instead of consumer choice, consumers are told what to do, how to do it, many times by counselors, and they're told, not by all counselors, some are better than others, certainly, but right now, where we have had issues where we've had to appeal cases, I had to appeal my own case. I was told that I didn't have an impediment to employment, that I could get a job. I was working and had some good positions, but I wanted to, as any of you want to, I want to do better in my life, and I think I have a right to do so. And I think that if we're told, no, you can only make this amount of money, or this is, we think that you're really quite qualified the way you are, you don't have to go back to school, you don't have to have, you don't have an impediment, so we don't need to have you, make you eligible. I appealed, I won my appeal. I now have a different counselor, but I've been working with the division right now for about 14, 15 months. It does take quite a while sometimes. We wonder why it takes so long. And we just believe that this is the right time, that to have a separate state plan for blind services will give us better quality services. We know that separate agencies that exist in the United States have a better outcome, employment outcomes, and better pay at closure. And we also know that, obviously the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation doesn't support this, and they're worried about it, and that we understand that they are have been talking to people, including some vendors, about this and using publicly funded monies to do so, instead of using their publicly funded monies to positively criticize or to positively deal with what they think are issues of core services for us, instead of beating the bushes, instead of talking for themselves, trying to get blind people to oppose our legislation. So we are very concerned about, how blind people are working here, and how, what they're doing, how they're working, and we certainly don't want to limit our possibilities, and we believe we'd be expanding our possibilities by having a separate division of blind services. Thank you very much, committee.
Thank you, Lynn. Appreciate you being here. Okay, next is Janice Weiss, and then I'm going to call Elmer Lindstrom forward for some brief comments. Ms. Weiss?
Yes.
Please go ahead, and Mr. Lindstrom, go ahead and come up to the chair, please.
Okay, my name is Janice Weiss, and I'm not representing any organization. I'm the mother of two daughters who are both visually impaired. They are now both adults. They have been visually impaired since they were children. Both of them have used the services of DVR, and I have absolutely no complaints about the service that they received from DVR. They used DVR services because they wanted to become self-sufficient and independent as they grew away from the home. They were able to go to college and to have professional careers. Had the same services been offered through the Department of Health and Social Services, I don't think they would have been nearly as willing to use those services, because even though they were visually impaired, they didn't see themselves as being dependent on any government services for their current living. They would have had a stigma attached to using health and social services as opposed to using DVR, which is under the Department of Labor and therefore much more inclined to be seen as helping people with careers than helping people with not being able to take care of their own lives. So that's one point, and I just have two more. And along with that one, the Center for the Blind and the Visually Impaired has been absolutely wonderful in working with both of my daughters in many different areas to help them do things independently. As teenagers, they didn't necessarily want to learn that from their mother, but they were more than willing to learn it from the certified and professional staff at the Center for the Blind. If there were a separate place for the blind to receive the services that DVR now does, I read through SB 94, and what I could see is that there would be a ridiculous amount of cost and administration needed to duplicate services that are already established and doing a really good job. The analogy I would have for that is the Anchorage School District. Both of my daughters went through the Anchorage School District all the way through graduation, and there's a separate blind and visual impairment program with ASD. And because that program was so small, there were so few blind, visually impaired students in Alaska, I did not feel that they got the services they needed at all while they were students in the Anchorage School District. Once they got to the University of Alaska, the department or the division of support services was wonderful, and they worked with people with all kinds of disabilities, not just with blind people, and they did a wonderful job because that was their job, to work with people who had a disability and needed some special adaptations in order to be able to have an equal playing ground in the university field. Let's see. And that's one of the reasons why I feel that there should not be a special place just for the blind to receive these kinds of services. I think they should go directly through the DVR counselors, who are professionals in what they do. They have knowledge of many more resources that are available for many kinds of disabilities, and often people who have visual disabilities also have other disabilities. But even if they don't, they still know services that provide that are provided for people with with a visual disability as well as without.
Ms. Weiss, can you please sum up?
Yes, I can. Okay. So I would not like to see the services for the blind move to a special agency. I think DVR and the Center for the Blind are doing a wonderful job, and I think the visually impaired and blind residents of Alaska would lose in the long run. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. We're going to hear a brief perspective from Elmer Lindstrom, get the department's initial thoughts or position on the record, and then we're going to go to Fairbanks for Stephen Priddle. So, Mr. Priddle, if you're there, please get into position. Mr. Lindstrom, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Elmer Lindstrom, project manager in the Office of the Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. And first of all, I'd certainly suggest you take testimony from the Department of Labor Division of Voc Rehab. They are the lead agency and have the expertise and knowledge of the underlying federal law and so forth that would be important to you. However, in the bill, of course, the new division would be located in the Department of Health and Social Services. We had the pleasure of meeting with Mr. Sanderson and Ms. Corral and several others early this year with the commissioner. And I'll be very brief. Maybe the the point the commissioner made, I think at that point is still valid, and that it's kind of you know, a little bit of be careful what you what you're wishing for. My department does not have the expertise in services to the blind, as does the Division of Voc Rehab, those sets of services certainly. As I understand the federal requirements, in fact, it would require a separate division in the Department of Health and Social Services in the, to meet the federal requirements, and it would be a very, very small fish in a very, very large pond. You know, we have divisions in my department that are larger than the Department of Labor in its in entirety. So to the extent the desire of the bill sponsors is to give these services more visibility and perhaps you know, more import, just a word of caution, you know, my department is very large and it easily could be a different result than that. Having said that, of course, my department would be happy to work with you and the advocates interested in this bill, the Department of Labor, and any other agency of the state that could perhaps get together and discuss how services might be improved. We are at your service in this in that regard, Mr. Chairman, but really have some reservations about this approach.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Lindstrom. Appreciate you being with us. Mr. Priddle in Fairbanks, and we have...
Are you able to hear me?
We have 20 minutes to get through about 20 people, so if you can be brief. We can hear you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman, esteemed committee members. I am... an attorney here in the state of Alaska. I have my own private practice law, Stephen J. Priddle. I'm also the state, the president of the state chapter of the National Federation of the Blind, which is the largest national organization of blind persons in the United States. It has chapters worldwide. In addition, I'm also a board member of the a board of directors of the Assistive Technologies of Alaska Loan Library, even though I'm not speaking on their behalf. I have been engaged in the community of disabled persons for quite some time. I've served on the state's ATA board, that's the Tech Act Project Board. I've been on board members with SALES, Southeast Alaska Independent Living. I've been involved in many different capacities. I am a DVR recipient. Prior to that, I was a logger, construction worker, and lost my vision. I was given services through DVR, and through their services, I was able to acquire several degrees, the most significant for my current profession is my Juris Doctorate. I was a corporate finance attorney for the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission in Washington, D.C. for several years. Because of that, former assistant district attorney for the state of Alaska and a district attorney for the state over in Whittier, and I have my own practice. All of that I have achieved through the services that I've received through the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. I am a success story. I'm a success story because DVR is a success story. And certainly there are going to be stories out there that aren't where they are not successful, but you can lead a horse to water. You can't make him drink. Historically and consistently, the National Federation of the Blind has promoted the separate services for the blind. The exception is for the state of Alaska. Logistically speaking, I do not think that there is any way possible that a separate agency to provide services for the blind can even come close to what DVR is able to do at this point without a tremendous increase in cost and funds. I mean, the blind in this state are spread across the entire state. And to think that you can stick a few people in Anchorage or wherever, Juneau, and that they would even begin to come close to providing the services for the blind that are being provided by DVR at this point is ridiculous. There is the Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. That center was initially started through the efforts of the National Federation of the Blind membership at the time of which Mr. Sanderson was a member. That center does a good job. If there are concerns about their abilities to be able to meet the needs of the blind in the state of Alaska, then the state should spend far less money giving grants to the center than they would have to spend trying to develop a state-run center. One of the items in the bill that concerns me deeply is that there is to be a registry whereby all blind persons are required or would be placed upon this registry. That bothers me deeply. While I understand it has been done in various states, it is incredibly offensive to me. There is great educational programs out there that are funded through the State Tech Act Project, the ATA, which is handled through DVR in conjunction with DVR. There's great educational projects out there that are being funded through ATLA, being funded through the Center for the Blind and Vision Impaired, and all the independent living centers. There is no way that a separate services for the blind for the state of Alaska would be appropriate at this time. Now, I'm not saying it wouldn't ever be, but things would have to change dramatically. Logistically speaking, there is no way that a separate services for the blind could even come close to doing what DVR does now. And I would love to speak to anybody that wants to hear about my views on this. And I love DVR. It has changed my life and the lives of many I know. And they've handled my case well. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Priddle, thank you very much for being with us. Let's go to Bobby Cleland at the Anchorage site, and then we will go to William Craig in Sitka. Bobby Cleland, please go ahead quickly.
Yes. Instead of using the prepared comments that I have with me, I'm going to try to paraphrase and be finished as quickly as possible. I concur with Mr. Priddle that I do not believe a separate center can provide the same services that vocational rehab can. DVR has done an excellent job for me. I am a business enterprise program person. I have been working for the past 15 years in this program. It is a jobs program and should remain within the Department of Labor. I, too, am extremely concerned about this registry. Actually, I'm insulted. I feel that it's a tremendous invasion of my privacy. It even reminds me of the registry for child molesters. And that's a pretty strong term to use, but that's the way I feel. In addition, I'm concerned about the source of funding. As Mr. Priddle said, it would take a huge amount of money, not to mention the impact, the cost of the impact on individuals' lives. The Center for the Blind does a tremendous job. I had training those 15 years ago at the center, which certainly improved my life. And like Mr. Priddle, I consider myself a success story. I began operating a small vending stand in the basement of the courthouse on 4th Avenue. And in the interim years, I've operated other businesses quite successfully. And now I am working as a contract manager at the Gold Rush Inn at Fort Richardson as the vendor contractor. So I have to applaud the Department of Labor and vocational rehabilitation, as well as the business enterprise program administrators. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cleland. We appreciate your testimony. William Craig, very as briefly as you can, and then we'll go to Joan O'Keefe.
Senator, my clear and understanding this bill is not going to clear this committee today.
That's what I've announced several times, yes.
Okay, I would like to pass at this time so I can be in person next time it comes up in front of this committee.
Okay, thank you very much. Ms. O'Keefe, followed by Claudia, and I can't read the last name. Ms. O'Keefe, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity to speak, and I will make it as brief as I can. Again, my name is Joan O'Keefe, and I'm the Executive Director of Southeast Alaska Independent Living. I am here today to testify to urge you to oppose Senate Bill 94. In a nutshell, we already have a state division, the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, that serves blind persons seeking employment. To separate out one group and set up a state division and hire new administrators and staff would be an enormous duplication of effort and an utter waste of sparse state and federal resources. It is possible this might be a good bill in states with a very large population of blind individuals and surplus funds. However, this is not the case currently in Alaska. In fact, Senate Bill 94 would, it's estimated, increase costs more than $500,000 annually. Federal regulations do require that a new division would have a full-time director, staff, as well as a state rehabilitation council. Each would incur additional expense and, again, is a duplication of effort. The Blind Services Division would not be able to justify the counseling staff that's needed to provide the same level of services that DVR currently provides throughout the state. DVR currently serves over 4,000, or approximately 4,000 people in the state, and approximately 2.6% of them are blind. The state will receive no additional federal funds to support this new division. And there's also some confusion, as been said by other speakers. This new division, as the bill is currently written, may only serve folks who are legally blind, creating confusion as to who would serve those who have a significant vision impairment. Or have multiple disabilities, which is the case for numerous folks that my center serves. Under Senate Bill 94, there would be no single point of contact for DVR services, which is currently a wonderful thing that we have with DVR being around the state. The federal dollars that are now granted by DVR to the Centers for Independent Living and the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired would go through this new division of blind services. SAIL has been working as a grantee and a vendor under DVR for 15 years, and we have the utmost respect for the management team and the expertise that is there. The current system is efficient and well managed. In closing, I urge you to oppose Senate Bill 94. In my opinion, it would be a colossal waste of money and would probably diminish the services available to the blind in Alaska. It would be a mistake to fix what is not broken for a new, untested division with a high fiscal note. And I thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Ms. O'Keefe, thank you very much for being with us. Claudia, and I can't read the last name, please come forward, and then we'll take, we may have time for one more off-net. Rick Renaud, if you could please be ready.
Since I'm visually impaired, I can't read the statement that I prepared for you.
Okay.
I appreciate the opportunity to come forward to this committee.
And can you state your full name for the record,
My name
please?
Is Claudia Criss, C-R-I-S-S, okay. And I'm from Juneau, Alaska. I've received services through DVR, and I'm very happy with what I've received. I oppose this bill. I feel that my personal philosophy of disability is that under the ADA law, universal design has been introduced with accessibility for all. The city of Portland, Oregon is a good example of an accessible city. But anyway, I do not think that setting a separate agency for the blind would help or make anything better in Alaska. I think that funds would be misused and mismanaged, possibly. I don't know. But anyway, with my philosophy of disability, I feel that people have the, they can either go forward and have success through their own skills, and they need to have the approach of educating others about disability in a positive way rather than a negative way. And I think my life has demonstrated this. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Chris, for being with us. We appreciate it. Rick Renaud.
Yes, my name is Rick Renaud, and I'm calling from Anchorage. I'm severely disabled, and I'm one of the 12 vendors that are participating in the Alaska Business Enterprise Program, and I'm the only vendor that is not blind. I operate the food services facility in the basement of the Nesbitt Courthouse here in Anchorage. The Alaska Business Enterprise Program has been critical to my ability to function as an independent, self-reliant, and contributing member of the community. My participation in the program has also made it possible for me to employ others and to help train blind Alaskans to be successful vendors, too. Since 11 of the 12 BEP participants are blind, and since there is growth in the program, the question arises as to why any change in the state law is needed nor desired. The concern cannot be that blind individuals are not being adequately serviced because of too much attention being given to other severely disabled people like me. Although the program is open to severely disabled Alaskans like me, blind persons have a priority under Alaska Statute 23.15. Perhaps that's why the program has only one person, me, who is not blind. In that light, one must ask why any change in the program is needed. Senate Bill 94 in Section 10 would appeal the Alaska Statute 23.15 that allows severely disabled individuals like me to take part in the business enterprise program. I worry that if I'm the only person now licensed and participating who would be affected, I believe I would lose my right to change my vendor site or seek a new site. I'm concerned that beyond that, that my existing vendor site could be challenged. I do not know why the authors of Senate Bill 94 would set out to damage me, or if that is not their intent, would put forward a measure that would have that effect. I have devoted 13 years of my life to the participation in the Alaska Business Enterprise Program, investing both time and money. What is the justice of cutting off my participation? And even more importantly, to the public interest, why should others who are severely disabled and who are just as worthy or more worthy than I be banned from the chance in future participation of the program? The present structure for administering vocational rehabilitation services should be preserved. I expect testimony from DVR will point out the improprieties which Senate Bill 94 would bring about. The idea that there should be two separate agencies, one for the blind and one for other disabilities, would add to administrative costs and run counter to the trend throughout the 50 states in which we have seen 25 states provide services through combined agencies, not separate ones. In the year 2006, DVR serviced 3,967 individuals, 104 of them which were blind. I believe that the creation of a blind services division would hurt, not help, the blind population because it is unlikely that a separate agency for the blind services could duplicate the expertise and the experience and provide the specialized personnel now being served in the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. In short, the backers of Senate Bill 94 have not identified a problem which requires legislation and have not offered a reasonable answer or solution to whatever the problem may be to exist. Senate Bill 94 is not a remedy for anything, but it would create new costs and yet another layer or agency of state government. I respectfully urge you to reject Senate Bill 94. Thank you.
Mr. Renault, thank you for your testimony. Unfortunately, we're running out of time today, and I apologize to all the folks who've not had an opportunity to testify. There will be opportunities in the future if the bill comes back before us, and folks will, there will be public notice if the bill comes back before us. But the session is quickly winding down. Everybody has an opinion. This is simply a discussion, and we appreciate the folks who've shared their opinions with us today. Is there any, and my apologies to the folks who were here for other bills that we did not get to. With that, is there any further business to come before us? Is that Jim Schwartz?
Yes.
Jim Schwartz, why don't you come forward? I'm going to ask Senator Stevens if he could take the public testimony. I'm due in another committee right now. So please go ahead, Mr. Schwartz. And Senator Stevens, thank you for chairing the committee. I'm sorry I have to go to another bill hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz, for being here.
Thank you.
Step on the record, please.
My name is James Schwartz. I'm a vendor in the Alaska Business Enterprise Program that is overseen by the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. And I'm in here in support of Senate Bill 94. And I just want to give you a quick little story here. I know time is of great importance. The last speaker we had talked about the facility that he's operating. It's in the Nesbitt Courthouse. There were two applicants for that facility, myself and Mr. Renault. The state statutes clearly give priority to the blind. Mr. Renault was awarded this facility over me. I am blind. I filed grievance on that, and through the administrative review, they supported the placement of a non-blind over the blind. And I am currently still going through that grievance procedure. If the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation has done one good thing for me, it's made me an advocate for the blind in this state. I'll just end with that. Thank you. Any questions?
Well, thank you, Mr. Schwartz. I appreciate all of your efforts, and we need lots of advocates for the blind, certainly. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any other comments anyone has to make at this time? Well, I appreciate everyone's comments, and I know that that the senator, the chairman, will schedule this later and let you know what the next hearing will be. Thank you all very much, and we're adjourned.